one really is just a report back. This issue came to us originally from Brazil in the context of service concession arrangements. And some of the major service concession providers in Brazil, one of whom now has a member on our interpretations committee. And the question had to do with variable payments. And let me give you a simple example that captures the problem. I'm a service concession operator, and I'm going to build a bridge and operate it as a toll bridge for the governmental unit that Ian represents. So Ian then becomes the grantor of the concession, and I'm operating it. And my obligation is to pay him a certain amount for every car that goes over. And I record a liability in most situations based on the number of cars that I expect to go over a period of 20 years or however long the concession is. But as an additional condition, both the amounts that I have to pay to Ian and the amounts that I can charge for those tolls are indexed to inflation. The problem for me as a reporting entity is that strictly applying IAS 39, when each of those inflation elements kicks in, I have to re-estimate the entire stream of payments back to Ian and revise the amount of my liability. Credit liability, and in most people's mind under IAS 39, debit expense for the entire remaining period this year. So I've picked up the effect of that inflation adjustment. Let's say there are 25 years remaining or 15 years remaining. The entire 15 years of the agreement. Now, economically, that's offset by the fact that I get to charge. I'm not giving up anything. I'm just saying, okay, I pick up the inflation on the liability, I get to charge it to the asset, but I don't get to recognize that asset. Under any of our standards, one solution would be to say, well, credit liability, debit asset. Some people, including some of our board members, say, no, that's not what IAS 39 and IFRS 9 say. You revise a financial liability, the debit goes, the debit or credit goes to the income statement for the entire revision. A lot of different solutions that companies have thought about doing, some more successful than others. Some people say, well, this is just an executory contract. It's not a liability at all. I'm just executing. So there's no liability or asset in their mind. That doesn't really meet with the IFRIC 12 conclusion on service concessions. The committee struggled with this over several meetings. And finally, and you can see it in the proposed agenda decision, said we can't deal with variable payments on a narrow basis. We think that's not appropriate. There's no difference between variable payments for a service concession arrangement and variable payments for a lease and variable payments for a lot of other things. And so, as is often the case, and as I say, this is just in the form of a report back to you because it was initially discussed, I think, at some of these meetings. Interpretations Committee said this is too big an issue for the committee to deal with. it would have to be dealt with by the board. The committee did explicitly consider the lease accounting model. Because in lease accounting, under the new standard, you do credit liability debit asset. And the committee considered whether they thought that model was appropriate outside of the context of lease agreements. And a majority of the committee, but no, by no means the overwhelming majority, said, no, we're unwilling to extend that model to other types of asset situations. It's, again, too big for us to try and do. So as you see in the agenda decision right up on page 8, and I think the one that finally appeared in IFRIC update is very similar, the committee just said, we just can't do this. Is it too big? We will report to the board. Obviously, we have 4 board members who are present anyway. But we will report to the board on this. But what will happen with it after that is uncertain. Part of the question comes back to the fundamental issue that you most recently saw in lease accounting, in which board members varied considerably over what they think creates some of these liabilities. Some of them said, well, this is what I've said, I think, by extension. This isn't a liability because it's based on your future performance, and therefore there's no recognizable liability. Others would say, as they've said in 37 and in leases, no, we think there's a liability there. Faced with that, we didn't think we could come to a conclusion. Reactions? Dimitri, did you want to comment?
Yeah. Basically, if we just take a simple loan with interest payments linked to a profit of a borrower, so basically linked to a performance of the borrower, I guess it's rather clear that it falls under the scope of IFRS 9 or IAS 39, yeah, you take any changes in your estimates through your profit or loss. Now, leases are obviously an exception to that. But if we take a loan and then we take a liability, for example, for which we incur as a result of buying a fixed asset with the same terms like linkage to profit, for example, or to similar indicators, I don't really see the difference between the two liabilities. There is a difference in the debit side, but on the credit side, I mean, the conditions are exactly the same. So, I mean, to me, it's a bit somewhat disturbing that this. Maybe I just don't see some of the arguments, but the suggestion that it's. I mean, the accounting for it is unclear under the current standards because. The notion, for example, of executory contract, because the very fact that it's linked to future profits or to some other future indicator, I mean, to me, doesn't equate with the fact that it would be executory or something. I find hard to see the difference between the loan linked to future profits and a liability for acquisition of something linked to future profits, because liability is the same.
Well, you put your finger right on it. I think the board has drawn a distinction, certainly in the leasing project, and you gentlemen, correct me if I'm wrong, between a condition linked to future operations, future profits, and a condition linked to an index. So a condition linked to inflation, inflation, for example, that's linked to an index. We know what the index is. We know how to work that one out. The issue, once you've recognized the liability, has never been over what you do with the credit.
Okay.
The credit goes to the liability. The question is where the debit goes. Some people have analogized to asset retirement obligations, in which we say we have a liability that gets revised annually, but the debit always goes to the asset, and then it finds its way to the income statement through depreciation. Some people thought that was an analogy here. As I say, my report back is that after struggling with it over a period of many months and trying to break it into smaller issues that maybe we could deal with individually, we finally just said, no, we can't do it. Jung-woo?
Yeah, the issue might be, yeah, as you just raised, that's a good point, you know, there's no difference in economics in their financial, you know, liability, another kind of, another type of financial liability, or maybe non-financial liability. But as Wayne said, you know, there will be, if we recognize something, every variable payment, then there might be, you know, some accounting mismatch on the balance, as explained. He explained in the debit side, the assets are not reflecting the whole change of fair value or variable payments. In the case of bank, you know, they recognize, you know, both assets and liabilities if they apply fair value. The everything, as you said, the future activity dependent on every index dependent on. So we recognize any value change in both sides. So there's no accounting mismatch at all. But some transactions, we do not recognize the debit side as a full fair value. Even that's a lease accounting standard, the new standard, we consider that the variable payments partially, not wholly. Just we included, we have included the change in value that depends on the index, as Wayne said. We do not consider any value change that depends on future activities. So as because we are still thinking about the possibility that if we include that kind of variable payments that depend on the future activity of this entity, they might not meet the definition of a liability. So as maybe one possibility is still we are having a kind of at the stage of executive contract, so we shouldn't recognize anything at all. So anyway, the new standard, even the new standard in the IFRS 16 on leases, we just stopped at the, in the middle of variable payments that only we recognize something, reflect something, value change that depends on the indexes, market prices, something else. So this issue is a very difficult issue, you know, conceptually, practically. However, the committee has done a very good job in analyzing all issues here, and I guess the board must take on this issue to resolve all the issues in practice. However, actually, this is a really big issue conceptually and practically, because people are thinking differently this issue, and maybe some people might think this is a liability, or even though that meets the liability, we cannot recognize them if their recognition criteria is not met, or maybe some we might think this is just only measurement issue, you know, not the recognition issue. So things are quite different, you know, we can see. This is a very, you know, different aspect, so it will take a lot of time. So for the board, we have to discuss something on this issue. However, we couldn't make a conclusion yet how to deal with this issue.
Yeah, I think hearkening back to Ian's comments about the conceptual framework, we did consider in discussing this whether the revisions to the conceptual framework provided any additional clarity on how we should approach this issue, and we concluded no, they didn't, and it would, I think, have been inappropriate for us to recommend to the board that they delay the conceptual framework for another 2 years while they hash through this issue. They know it's there, so.
No, I understand that perhaps it's clearly disturbing to have all of a sudden these big movements in the profit or loss because of the future changes for all those years, but I guess what I'm struggling with here is that we can have a loan to buy a fixed asset or an intangible asset, a loan with payments linked to future profits, for example, and or we can have we can acquire the same fixed asset directly with an obligation with payments linked to future profits. So economically, there's no difference. And yet, in the first case, I don't think we would find any difficulty under the current standards, because we would say, okay, it's a loan, it's under IAS 39, or IFRS 9, you use that. So I don't really see why would we really struggle under the, even if I understand we may not like the requirements, but I struggle to see why do we think that this is really unclear. The second case as opposed to the first case.
And I think I know at least one board member who attends our meetings regularly who doesn't think there's any lack of clarity at all. That board member would say, if it's a loan, any changes that are recognized are in the nature of interest, put them in the income statement, end of discussion. That would be the position that board member would take. And that board member is considered as, appropriately, a financial instrument specialist. Others would say there's a difference between interest and a profit participation, which is effectively an embedded derivative. Maybe that would lead me to a different conclusion as opposed to an index. There's a difference between a regular asset purchase, a lease, and a service concession arrangement. Maybe I ought to get different answers about where the debit goes, not about where the credit goes, in some of those circumstances. The majority of the committee ultimately came to your conclusion that they couldn't find a difference. That if there's a question about where the debit goes, it ought to be answered across that entire spectrum of transactions. And that's not something that you pay a bunch of part-time interpretation committee members to do. It's something you pay a lot of highly capable, eminent, and skilled board members to do.
I agree. I'm sorry to be staying on this, but just because I guess my concern is that I've had to deal with a number of situations where with profit participation loans, like in the oil and gas industry and other industries, where. I mean, the conclusion, as much as we didn't like it, seemed to be rather clear from IAS 39, that indifference goes to profit or loss. And now, I mean, wouldn't that agenda decision call into question all, not only the treatment of the acquisition of plant and equipment, but all sort of profit participation liabilities that basically would tell people that, well, there's uncertainty. We're not sure whether it should be whether it should really under the current standards go to profit or loss. So don't we just open a bigger issue. I understand. Maybe the board should really rethink how these profit participation arrangements should be accounted for. I would find it very good if it would happen. But currently, wouldn't we just saying, okay, we don't know, so all of a sudden all profit participating or profit linked obligations would be cast into the gray zone of basically.
I don't think. Yeah, I'm going to be very due process oriented here. Saying that we can't answer the question does not mean every answer is equally acceptable. It just means that we think that there's a much broader scope here. So it's as if we said we can neither confirm nor deny. What we've said is we think this is a great big bundle of issues, and that's not something the Interpretations Committee can deal with. Okay. We now move to emerging issues that any of you want to raise. This is sort of a free-for-all, and it can last for 45 minutes or it can last for 5 minutes. Just depends on whether you have issues you'd like to bring with us. Dr. Al-Razin?
Yes. I just repeated my question yesterday. If you can help us whether to apply IS-20 to other grants, not only government grants. I would like to hear the views of the member here. And the other issue is why IS-20 give the option to measure non-monetary assets in nominal value. So if I hear some of the views, because we are in the process of for endorsing IS-20.
Reaction? As my personal view, and I'd ask the board members to weigh in, is if you want to know why IAS-20 does something, you have to go back and interview a number of people, several of whom are dead.
And there is no basic conclusion.
There's no basis except for the fact that there's little bits of it sort of sprinkled through the standard. But that back then the IASC did not do a basis for conclusions on standards. If they did, they were usually written by Paul Pachter rather than by the board. So they were the staff's view of what the basis was, not the committee's view. So I can't tell you why it does that. I think that's a crazy answer. But there it is.
You go back to history to that committee. I used to attend it during the 90s. I'm not to blame for IS-20. And it involved a lot of compromise because it was a great big table of 30 or 40 people. And I would think, without knowing the history of IS-20, it was a compromise to help those who thought one thing and those who thought the other, so they said, well, do whatever. So there wouldn't have been any great logic, I don't think, in it. We all know, well, most of us think it's a flawed standard anyway, so I understand your problem in adopting it. And, you know, IS-26 is a little bit the same, the pension fund one.
There's no use for IS-26 like IS-20 is how it is.
Yeah, but you'll use 20, yeah. And the discussions yesterday really highlighted to me, if you wanted to redo IS-20, you know, there's actually quite a lot of difficult questions to answer on the way through.
What I'm looking for is just a general impression. Is there any harm for applying IS-20 to other grants, not government grants? That's my question. So I need just a high impression if you've been asked what you think. That's all. And the other question, is there is any reasonable or reason for allowing non-monetary assets that can be measured reliably to be measured in nominal value? So that's you. Not let your user financial statement use this piece of information if you measure the non-monetary assets in nominal value.
I'm going to tread on thin ice here. You guys hit me up alongside the head if you've got it wrong. The use of nominal value is an option.
Yes.
In IAS 20. When last I looked at our operating agreement with national standard setters, we said if you want to eliminate options, go ahead.
We already eliminated. Why is that a solution? Do you have any idea why they might be the good reason behind it?
I think Ian's right. It was a compromise.
So you just eliminate it right now?
Yeah, yeah. And that's not a problem.
But the only problem is that right now, if there's a reason, we may miss some things. That's,
no. No.
The other thing is applying this 20 to other grants, because we have huge foundations. It's not governmental. They usually give grants. So can we apply it safely, or is it some kind of reservations?
My argument would be that if that's the best analogy you can find, then under IAS 8 you should apply it by analogy. So if you say, well, no, the Wayne Upton Benevolent Fund is not a government, but a grant from the Wayne Upton Benevolent Fund looks an awful lot like a government grant, then yeah, I would do that. Chung Wu?
Just, I agree with all your points. However, Wayne's advice, be careful about Wayne's advice to eliminate that option of nominal value. In some other cases, you might need this option. For example, we are currently thinking about pollutant pricing mechanism in France, in Korea. They are using this nominal value approach to eliminate the first day one asset and liabilities. So,
really?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is a kind of a one good way to avoid to recognize a big amount of a huge amount liability in this kind of things. However, if the board can allow a kind of a linked presentation that allows offsetting of their asset and liability at day one, in the case of government gives us some kind of allowance, you may use this allowance at the end of this year if you are polluting some excess amount of their things. Then the companies are very happy if they can use one of these two options, or one is a linked presentation, and one is nominal value amount. So what I'm saying is this is a little, not so good standard, because we have we are providing one option in addition to the default approach. However, I'm just suggesting one good example. You need to, even though for your country to solve the one issue by eliminating this option, then you can create another big problem. Not to adopt the, maybe you cannot create your own pollutant pricing mechanism like in France and like in South Korea.
It seems to me by removing the option you actually solve the problem, not create the problem. Because I think France and Korea are incorrect.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, let's press on. I'm cognizant that we have a cruise to go on, and I don't want any of us to miss it. I don't want to miss it. Can we turn to the communique? This is the form that we have used for every meeting. All that's changed is the name of the players. May I ask you to take just a couple of minutes and see if there are any changes that you propose? Any changes?
How about adding the Malaysia's responses on their own issues, even though they couldn't come to here personally, but they provided all kind of their answers to the court, those questions.
Now that happens in not just with Malaysia, but in a number of meetings.
I see.
So I think I'd be reluctant to to make an exception here.
Okay.
All right, may I ask for a motion that we approve the communique? Moved and seconded, it stands approved. We will publish it on the IASB's website in the Emerging Economies Group section. Next to the summary of the meeting. Ian, you've been keeping detailed notes.
Well, I have, but I don't know that they're much use to me in the summary. I mean, this is the same format that we've been following for quite a while, which I actually think is quite a successful format in that we have one full day on in-depth discussion, and I must say it was very well led by our Russian compatriots, and I actually learnt a lot out of those papers. I always knew that IS-20 was broken, but I hadn't understood all the ramifications, and particularly with the lower interest rates or the subsidised interest rates, etc., and some real conceptual problems on how that flows through. And then the question raised this morning, why is it only about government grants? What's the difference between whether the money comes from the government or comes from somebody else? So that had two effects on me. One, I can see that people actually use the standard. I'm really alarmed that France and Korea are using it inappropriately, in my view. genuinely on that. I mean, it's a loophole that just shouldn't be there, and it's wrong accounting. So it pointed out to me very much this is a real problem, whereas in my mind I kind of thought, well, people get around it and, you know, we go on. But it's clear there are real problems. It's not raising its head on the agenda consultation at all, which means other people are thinking it's not a real problem. But I think it's a good chance, and if you could please follow up, as Wayne invited you to give your opinions on this, it's a good chance for the Emerging Economy Group to put up its hand, along with high inflation, I guess, and say this is something that we're really having to deal with, and maybe you should have a look at it. And you need to do that in the next few months, because I think you can't overemphasize that the ISB is at a bit of a turning point. The big projects are being finished, and they've been very big, and they've been ongoing since the beginning of the convergence. This thing was 2005, I think, or 2004.
Yeah.
So they've taken 11 years, but if we could get concepts and insurance out of the way, we're not looking at more convergence programs. So there's the big agenda debate. Do you want to take on major projects, or do you just want a period of calm? And maybe this is one which could be looked at as worthwhile doing. Except that having been raised, I wouldn't look to think that we could solve it in 2 or 3 years. There's some fairly major conceptual questions in there, I think. And it's the old debate of taking your head up front or smoothing it. You know, it's the debate we have in lots and lots of standards. And there's people who feel passionate on both sides, so it'll take a bit of time to resolve. So I thought it was a really worthwhile discussion, and I think we needed to go into the depth that we did go into, and Dimitri's is on his feet all day, guiding us through it. So thank you, Dimitri, because I think that was worthwhile doing. If we hadn't done that, you kind of skim over some of the things, unless you really think about some particular circumstances. And if you want to know where I said, I'm an upfront man. But that's the way I've been for, well, you know, I'm biased from Australia. That's what we did with our standards right from the start. We had administrative issues and topics for future meetings, and we decided on, well, again, you were asked for people to write in, but there were some suggestions.
Yeah, I think the two suggestions I wrote down, and I've been thinking about them since, one was put forward as asset retirement obligations. I would say that that could easily expand into a day on IAS 37 and the future of IAS 37. The other one that was put forward is separate financial statements, or what I would label, I think the label Dimitri used was individual financial statements. I'm not sure that's a full day topic, but I think we could easily spend an hour or two on the second day on that. So I'd ask you to think about it in those terms and whether or not we could approach it that way. But I do invite your comments. I will wait for 2 weeks to hear from you, and then I'll decide what to do from there.
Okay. And then we're having the meeting in South Africa. There's a date to be decided, I understand. But Johannesburg will be the place.
Yeah, I think that date we said we need to follow up and see when the AOSSG is meeting.
Yeah.
But subject to that, we said the last week in November.
Yeah, which I think it might clash. And the AOSSG is in New Zealand, so it's not really...
kind of hard to get back and forth.
Yeah, And I'm pretty sure that's a November meeting, late November meeting.
So we'll find that out for sure.
Yeah. Then we had a wonderful dinner last night in the tower, historical tower, wonderful views, very nice food, good camaraderie, and so we thank our Turkish hosts for a very nice night. Now, I gave a boring session for an hour this morning on ISB update. We had to get through that. And then Wayne... we're lucky to have the chairman of the interpretations committee as our chairman here, because there's a lot of good links, and it's, Wayne can pick out those that he thinks are most pertinent to this group. We had a general discussion, not very long, and approval of the communique. And I guess this will be my last meeting, and it leads me to think, what's the future of this group? This group was really set up initially at the suggestion of the trustees, and there was a feeling that we weren't dealing with issues that are coming through emerging economies. I find the definition of emerging economies fairly interesting, but we didn't make up the definition. We used the definition that's generally used. And I think these meetings are showing that there are issues and you need a voice. I mean, around this table, South Africa and Brazil, I think it's all are represented on the board.
Around the table today, Korea is represented on.
Oh, Korea, yes. And China is represented on the board.
That's correct, yes.
Sometimes India also.
Yeah, they used to be with PK, yeah, but they're not currently represented on the board. Yeah. which, by the way, I mean, I'm straying, but that's another debate that will be had this month at the trustees meeting. So in their review, officially the board is presently made up of 16 members. We haven't reappointed two for the last 3 years, so we've had 14 members in reality, 16 officially, 14 in reality. So the question was asked in their review, what do you think's the relevant number? Now, Hans, the chairman, is quite keen on 13, and I'm never quite sure why he picked 13 as a number. There's cost ramifications, there's a sort of the efficiency of the debate in those, but a counter to that is regional representation or geographical representation, so it's always a balance on an international board between those two things. My personal experience has been that 16 was quite difficult to manage. It's a lot of people. 14 seems to work better. Whether 13 will work better than 14, I'm not really sure. How did I get on? Oh, who's represented around the table? And it's going to, if you want my personal view, and I don't have a vote or even involved in the discussion, I suspect that the trustees will stick on 14, the present number, rather than go down to 13. But maybe Hans is more persuasive than I give him credit for. He may persuade them otherwise. I don't think it actually will make a huge difference one way.
We have two board members who are retiring.
Three.
With you.
Myself, Pep Finnegan and Philippe.
Philippe Chanchu.
He doesn't go until October, but Pat and I finish on the 30th of June. So there's discussions and interviews and things going on for replacements. But it depends a bit on the number. So they have to resolve the number this month and then decide on how they make appointments. Which is something at some stage the Emerging Economies Group could think about, you know, geographical representation on the board and how it should work, and you know, because that's being discussed as well. So, so I guess my point was there is a place for this group to have its voice heard. And Hans will have to decide which of the board members should attend this meeting going forward. It may be that he would like the new vice chairman to be attending. It depends a little bit on who that is, and that's undecided at this stage. So that's another process that will be gone through and decided in about October this year. It takes that long to move through the process. So I guess what I'm saying in broad is that I think this group's worthwhile still. I think the structure of the meetings is quite good, as long as we keep coming up with topics that are worthwhile. If you start running out of topics, then you question whether it's worthwhile, the group meeting. So I think that takes me through everything I wanted
to
say.
Thank you for that. Just one other bit of information. We also are in the process of filling vacancies on the Interpretations Committee. The structure of that committee is a little bit different in that you start from the base of saying you have to have the four major firms at the table. That kind of a committee wouldn't work if you only had three of them. Because many of the issues turn out to be, of the five firms that are represented at the table, one is an outlier. And there's a certain amount of peer pressure that comes into play here. So we've said from the beginning that the four major firms, and then we have one rotating seat among the three firms that are in the next tier. That would be Mazars, Grant Thornton, and BDO. And that seat rotates between those three firms. So you start and you have a 13-member committee following the Hans rule. And then we ask how we should fill the remainder of the seats. It's an interesting mix now. We have one academic, your former colleague from Korea, who's on there. We have had a number of preparers and will continue to have a number of preparers who are members of the committee. We have one financial analyst who's on the committee. She represents the CFA Institute, although, and this is a difference between the committee and council, despite the fact that we say we have to have the five major firms at the table, they're there as individuals. So when I turn to Reinhardt from KPMG, I don't want to hear the standard, necessarily, KPMG view. I want to hear his view. And that's an important distinction. We do try to get a geographical balance. Having already said, five of the seats are already taken. And we do try to balance Asia, Europe, the Americas. We have a member from Brazil, Carl Douglas, who's with one of the big concessionaires or service concession providers. If we lack anything, we're perhaps a little bit light on financial instruments. That tends to be kind of both in the firms and in the IASB a separate priesthood that is only practiced by expertly initiated and past members of that priesthood. But we're always able to supplement that. So that just following on Ian's comments, a little background on how we fill the interpretations committee spots. The trustees have reached decisions on the next set of new members, but those have yet to be released for public. So I can tell you there's been a decision, but I can't tell you who.
Just one other question that occurred to me while you were speaking. I wonder whether we shouldn't have a staff member come along as well, if there's a particular topic.
Well, we have. We did once.
Yeah.
We had on discount rates.
Yeah, AIDA.
AIDA came.
Yeah.
And that was very well received.
Yeah.
We didn't on this one because we don't really have
anybody doing IS-20 yet.
Certainly if we decide that IAS-37 is the topic, I don't know if Henry could spring the time loose, but he's got a lot of background in that.
Joan.
Yeah. Whether she can get the family's commitment squared away.
Yeah.
We have in the past at least once.
Yep. Okay.
Other questions, reactions? Do I hear a motion to adjourn? Okay. Motion to adjourn is always in order.
Or could we?
Oh.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Just a quick one. I thank Ian for the roundup and everything. But I think there's a missing link between the topic that we discuss and what happens to them. I know there were instances where you said you will take some to the ISB. I wonder if we can have a standing agenda item as to what happened. Was it thrown out?
That's a valid point, and I think at either our last meeting or the one before, I prepared a summary for you, and I think our intention is to keep that as a running tabulation on the IAS, on the Emerging Economies Group section of the website. But thank you for that reminder. I need to be sure to update it.
Yeah.
So I take responsibility for that.
There's one other point of process, actually, when you mention it. And the Due Process Oversight Committee of the Trustees reviews all the committees of the board from time to time. And I wonder if it isn't time kind of for an official review of this group, including feedback from all the members, you know, some sort of survey, and then pull it together and then present it to the Due Process Oversight Committee as this is how long we've existed, this is what we've done, this is what our goals are, this is what we think we should do in the future, etc., etc. I think it's about time for that, Wayne, isn't it? We've never had that sort
of... We've never done it.
So I think it wouldn't be a bad time to, you know, in the next 6 months or so, or perhaps at the next meeting, to get that underway and get something back.
I'll speak with the staff in London about how we ought to initiate that.
Yeah.
because that's certainly good corporate governance. No question about that.
But we'd need good feedback from the members of the group of what they think, you know, good and bad, and how we could improve in the future, whether we need to continue, all those sorts of questions could be on the table, I think, and could be part of the discussion at the next meeting if you're looking for
certainly
for other things to do. One other thing we haven't done properly, Wayne, is thank our hosts for we thanked them for the meal last night, but for the overall organisation.
Oh, yes.
It's been a very successful meeting, very, very, very well organised.
We did that tomorrow, yesterday morning, but we should always do it again. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so thank you very much. It's been a great success.
Well,
yeah. There's nothing like coming to a country to find out more about it.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lunch is... Do we go right now, or do we have to wait? Or?
12 o'clock, yeah.
So.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Bruce. We'll be right back.